It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and Halloween is upon us. One more week to go. But before that, there's a celebration coming up, which precedes Halloween both in our calendar in Anchorage and also, as I'm told, historically. Celtic New Year, Samhain, is the date when the Celtic communities in Anchorage will get together and celebrate the coming of the Celtic New Year, the fall equinox, and the connection between the world of ancestors and the world of the living. Something like Halloween, perhaps a predecessor of Halloween, but something that may be, while a celebration, also a bit more solemn. And so today we're taking the occasion to talk to members of the Celtic community of Alaska, the Scottish Club, the Irish Club, the sort of umbrella community, and a very active group and a lot to talk about and a lot to share with our listeners. And I'm hoping that those of you out there who have Irish, Scottish background, or even Welsh or Cornish or a lot of other groups, I understand, will call in and share your thoughts and your memories about Celtic New Year and why it's important for you to connect with the people that share your heritage. So I have three guests with me today. Sean McGrane is with the Irish Club of Alaska. Thanks for being with us, Sean.
You're welcome.
John Ruthie is president of the Alaska Scottish Club.
Hello.
And he came in a kilt, so we know that he really is Scottish. And Natalie Novick was the person with the Celtic community of Alaska who kind of inspired us to do the show on the occasion of Celtic New Year. Am I saying it right, Samhain?
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what is special about this day? Why do you celebrate it?
Well, if you go very far back in time, when our ancestors lived in all over Europe, before even they moved to the British Isles. This was the night when the day is the same length as the night and when the veil between the two worlds is lifted. And so this was one of what's called the four fire festivals in the year. You have three more. And this was a night when you were really conscious of the fact that your ancestors could come visit. And the church, when it took over, you know, probably by 300-400 AD in the British Isles and on the continent, could not eradicate this very ancient celebration. So they decided that November 1st would be All Saints Day, remembering all the saints. And the day before that was the eve of All Saints or All Hallows Day. And that's how we get Halloween. So in other words, it's the same day. It's the same celebration. But of course, over the centuries, and particularly in America, it has taken a very different color.
It turned into a kid's Halloween for costumes. And now it's more sort of a grown-up holiday where people wear costumes, go crazy and all that. Do people wear costumes for the Samhain celebration?
Well, we do it because we understand that in America there is one day where you really want to go bonkers.
And people in Anchorage love wear costumes for every occasion.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then the thing is that it's also the occasion for us to wear our traditional clan regalia. Uh-huh. And that is also recognized during that night. But I have to say that when you're in Europe, in the Celtic countries, that night is not a night to go bumping in the night. Mm-hmm. Everybody is staying home and staying quiet. And in the countryside in particular, people will put some food, some offerings by the door and leave both doors, the back door and the front door, open so they can come and go and have a little food.
So it's more of a sacred affair there.
Kind of, or at least some respect solid for your mm-hmm. your ancestors and a remembrance of that. Mm-hmm. So we do a little bit of that. We light the old fire of the old year in which you can cast all your regrets and sins and everything. And then we extinguish that old fire and rekindle a new fire in which you put all your good wishes for the new year, hmm. and your resolutions and so on. And there is this thinking that as you do that, you're doing it in respecting your ancestors.
And the celebration is coming up this weekend, and we'll give you information about that in a minute. But I really want to put out the phone number for members of the Celtic communities in Anchorage who want to share memories or tell us, you know, why is it important for you to connect with other people of your heritage, and what's fun about it, what's interesting about it. The number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. The email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. John, you came to the studio in a kilt. Is this a family?
Yes, this is the tartan of my clan, mm-hmm. which is the clan Muir, which is also encompasses Moor. They recognize 11 different variations of the name. Anything that sounds similar to Muir, Moor, Omor, Omorda is included in this group.
Okay. And is that something that's been passed down through your family, that you've identified with it, or is something you discovered later? Or
I discovered it later. I got involved with the Scottish Club about 7 years ago, and my mother had always told us that we had Scottish in our background, uh-huh. and she didn't know who or what. So I went to the Scottish Highland Games, uh-huh. which is the last weekend of June every year. Mm-hmm. This next year will be our 32nd.
Wow.
And I went to that about 7 years ago, and I got interested, and I said, okay, well, who do I root for? Who's my clan? Who's my people? Uh-huh. You know, so I went and I did the genealogical research on it and found a Moor who had been born in Scotland in 1730, and his family immigrated to Virginia by 1740. Mm-hmm. So, and I had traced back to that, so I was looking for a Moor clan. I couldn't find one, and then I saw the Muirs, mm-hmm. and I got a hold of them, and they accepted me. And
oh, really? So you actually contacted them in Scotland and said, I'm part of their clan. And
I'd like to join the clan, and they said, well, you don't need to join. You're already a member by blood.
You probably can't join.
Yes. Uh-huh. So I got a kilt made in their tartan, uh-huh. which is a pattern of fabric. The colors and the pattern of the weave mm-hmm. makes a tartan.
Right.
All tartans are plaids, but not all plaids are tartans.
When you go to these celebrations, is there other regalia and other stuff that you guys wear and put together?
Yes. There's a whole outfit. It depends on how formal or how informal the event is, mm-hmm. of what you would wear. Mm-hmm. At a very formal one, you'd have either a Prince Charles jacket, or I use a semi-formal jacket, which is called an Argyle jacket, and a tie, and a dress shirt, and my kilt, and a sporran, which is basically a wallet on a chain.
Okay.
Hangs in front. Mm-hmm. That's what the pouch is that hangs in front.
I can picture what you're talking about. Yeah.
That's called a sporran. It's basically your wallet. Mm-hmm. You have no pockets in a kilt.
Okay.
So, and then you would wear your kilt hose and flashes and dress shoes.
Uh-huh.
The dress shoes are called ghillie brogues.
Do you get any funny looks when you wear a kilt around Anchorage?
Occasionally.
Yeah. Because it's pretty unusual around here.
Well, there's several people that I know that wear them all the time.
Uh-huh.
They wear a black, it's called a sport kilt,
uh-huh.
and they wear it all the time. So, and there's like I said, there's many different manufacturers of kilts.
It's probably getting more familiar now than it was in the past, because I think people are getting more in touch with some of these things.
Yes, it's been spreading.
Mm-hmm.
So
Sean McGrain with the Irish Club, how did you get involved with being active in the Irish community in Anchorage?
Well, it was about 30 years ago or so, a group of us Irish Americans and Irish citizens living here in Anchorage got together and created the Irish Club as a way to introduce and educate people to the music, the culture, the arts of Ireland.
Mm-hmm. And you, is it a pretty big group, or how many people are there who are involved?
We have a, you know, it's like so many other groups at Anchorage, you know, we're small but mighty.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually have a Facebook page, and I think we're at around 500 people that follow us on a Facebook page.
Wow, that's quite a few, yeah.
Exactly. Membership is small, but the following is actually fairly large.
Uh-huh.
And so we have, we participate in events such as Samhain with the Celtic community. We also participate at the Highland Games for the Scottish Club. And then our large fundraiser is coming up here November 9th. It's the Jared McDonald Memorial Cayley. And that'll be an evening a little similar to Samhain, but it's, you know, there'll be some music and some dancing demonstrations of the Irish dance schools here at Anchorage.
Uh-huh.
All for to fund a scholarship. An awardee receives a $500 scholarship to apply towards an endeavor to do with Irish culture, whether it be dancing, going to a school to learn more about dancing or music or culture.
And what was the word you used? A Cayley?
A Cayley. Yeah, a Cayley is a party, if you will, music and dancing. Cayleys occur all the time in Ireland. It's an Irish term for a party, but it's got more meaning than just a party because you have more to it. Because you do have a band playing, will have Irish music, and then also the traditional Irish dancing. So it involves the people. We encourage the people when we have dancing in the evening to come up and to learn about traditional Irish dancing.
Mm-hmm. And where is that taking place? And I assume it's open to the public.
It is. It is open to the public. It is, again, November 9th, which is coming up here. It will be at St. Patrick's Parish in Muldoon.
Okay.
Tickets are available at Celtic Treasures. They are at Old Seward and Tudor.
Okay.
And I believe tickets are $20 in advance, $25 at the door, if I'm correct.
And you know, it's interesting to me that listening to all three of you, I don't hear a lot of Irish accents. It's not like you guys just got off the boat or something. It's more like this is something you're identifying with as Americans, right, Sean? I mean, your name certainly, Sean McGrane. That's really a good name for an Irish club president. But how far back are your Irish roots?
We can trace the McGrane family to coming over after the Great Famine.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the some of them 1840s, 1860s, moving into the Midwest of America, which so many of them went to.
Mm-hmm.
I do have some older threads in America. One part of my family I can trace back to a Jamestown descendant. But it's that tie-in. I really didn't associate with the tie until early 80s. My father really got strongly interested in the Irish background. He realized that, talking with other people, that he didn't have a connection with it for whatever reason, that lost in the few generations and coming to America, any stories or any words being carried over. And so he started doing a little some history and making connection back to Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you kind of carried on with the family tradition after that.
I have.
Yeah.
I have. Yeah. Yes. Currently, what I started doing here in around 2007, we had an official visit by Aimer Dean, who at the time was the Consul General of Ireland from the Western United States. And so what I do is I'm sort of their representative in Alaska. If something happens up here, they can give me a call, and then I go out and investigate and help Irish nationals if they need to. So there is a connection,
mm-hmm.
Still try and maintain a connection back there. And we try and have visits every couple of years from the consulate in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come up, we try and make sure that we have some public events. People can come out and meet them. And you get to hear that wonderful Irish brogue.
Yeah, that's neat. And I wanted to talk more about that, but I want to let listeners know that the show is Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're obviously talking about Ireland, Scotland, Celtic community. The Celtic New Year is coming up, and there's a big celebration, and we're going to give you the date and place of that in just a moment. But we'd love to hear from other people who are involved or not involved, but who are members of the Irish or Scottish communities. And, you know, why is this important to you? Why is this particular connection an important one? I was just thinking about my own heritage. I could say I was German, or I could say I was Welsh, or I could say I was English. I could say I was from the southern United States. I guess we're all a bit of what did the president call himself? A mutt, right? We're all a mix, you know. And so at some point we decide. And all three of my guests have decided they're very much involved in the Celtic community. Sean McGrain, you were just hearing from with the Irish Club. John Ruthie, president of the Scottish Club. And Natalie Novick, who is a board member of the Celtic community of Alaska. Natalie, before we go any farther, tell people how they can go to Samhain. Where is it taking place, and what time and all that?
So we have elected a few years ago to do it at the Senior Center in Anchorage. Not that it's an event for seniors, but since we need a place where we can light a fire safely, this was a very good place for us to do it. Mm-hmm. So you can buy your tickets in advance, once again at Celtic Treasures, which ends up being kind of the hub for okay. all of us. They're located 4240 Old Seward Highway across from Brown Jug. And the tickets in advance are $20. They're $10 for kids. There are discounts for seniors and military. At the door, the tickets will be $25.
Okay. And date and time?
So it will be this coming Saturday, October 26th, and we will open the doors at 6:30. It does not mean you have to be there at 6:30. You can come later. It's no problem. The evening will go on till 10:30, maybe even 11 p.m.
Okay.
So it's you know, irrelevant what time you show up. There will be finger food, and the theme this year is the Isle of Man. So the Senior Center is preparing some Manx food for you guys to try.
Wow, which would be what?
Well, they're going to have queenies, which are the Manx version of fish and chips.
Okay.
And then I know that they're also preparing honey cakes for dessert. So we're going to have that Manx flavor. Uh-huh. We're going to have it also in the music and dance, because they have been rehearsing Hupchuna, which is the Samhain song on the Isle of Man. And so we're going to have this demonstrated. And then the rest of the evening, there will be a lot of entertainment. We'll have a costume contest. There is a wonderful silent auction. We got two free tickets on the Alaska Railroad to go to Seward, and lots of other great prizes. And then we will have a little ceremony by the fire, and then lots of music, lots of good times.
So the Isle of Man has its own sort of cultural identity.
It's a very interesting place. You know, I was there 4 years ago. It's literally a mixture of Ireland and Scotland, but people, because of its location, are
also... Where is it exactly?
It's halfway in the Irish Sea between Scotland and Ireland.
Okay.
In a small island. It's like 26 miles by 12, you know. But they also have great communication with Wales and even Brittany because of the fishing.
Uh-huh.
And when I was there, the first night, it was pouring with rain. And I had made contact with some of the musicians. They found me a bed and breakfast, wonderful place to stay. They came and picked me up, and they took me to a ceilidh, once again, the same word, asked me to play the harp. And then, you know, we had a great evening of music and dance. And then the next day, the sun was shining, a rare event on Man, which is said to be protected from the enemies by the god Manannan MacLir, who makes an effort to have fog shrouding the island most of the time.
I see. Thanks, helpful. Yeah.
Very helpful. But the thing is that it's a wonderful place, because almost every half mile there is something of interest, whether it's an old fort, whether it's the TLS, Manx Cats Retirement Home, whether it's the museum. I mean, there's always, always something very interesting to see on the island.
Isn't it interesting that in these countries, which are so small, there's so much concentrated culture that you can also almost walk around and there's something behind every bush and every rock. So when you're coming from this huge place of Alaska, it's quite different, isn't it?
Yeah. And the thing that's interesting also about the Isle of Man is that they are outside of the United Kingdom, so they are heaven for banking and insurance. And they have built a wealth on that basis, so young people are no longer emigrating, they're staying there. And they're investing their wealth in their own culture. They have Manx language immersion schools, plural, not just one. And in more recent times, they have started investing in the space program with NASA.
Wow.
Manx and the Moon.
Wow. Amazing. I had no idea. So, John, in terms of your Scottish heritage, have you been back to Scotland and sort of learned all about it since you've gotten interested in it
I haven't made it over to Scotland yet. Like I said, I've been really interested in it about the last 7 years or so. So it's fairly new for me.
Yeah. But what is it that, I mean, about this part of your heritage that really makes you want to be super involved in it? You know, why is that? I'm sure you have other pieces of heritage you could grab onto.
I've got German and Welsh also, and I have a French ancestor, and I have English, and but I'm not really sure. It's just something, the music, it just struck me. You know, it just reached out and grabbed me and just compelled me to learn more about it.
Yeah.
And it's been an interesting journey.
And American popular culture, Irish and Scottish culture, is very, very popular regardless of whether it's related to your own heritage, isn't it? I mean, this the in the movies and music and dance, I mean, everybody knows about Irish dance and
it's fairly pervasive in most of the culture of America, because everybody's got a little bit of,
it seems that way, doesn't
part
it?
Of it, you know, in their heritage somewhere.
Now tell me about these the games. That it sounds like that's how you originally got interested.
Yes the Alaskan Scottish Highland Games, it's the last weekend of June every year. Like I said, this will be the 32nd year this next year. The last few years we've been growing in attendance. The 3 years ago we had about 6,000 through the gate. The next year we had about 8,500. Last year we had about 10,000 through the gates.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where do you do it?
We have been holding it at the Lions Club Park in Eagle River. It's at Eagle River Road and Eagle River Loop, basically that corner. And it's we do the Scottish heavy athletics. There's 8 events, and there's we have a band usually from Scotland come over, or of Scottish. They at least have to have a piper, minimum. So they at least have to have a pipe player in the band. 2 years ago, we had 2 bands. We had a brother who was originally out of Scotland and is in... brother's was out of Australia or New Zealand, and they moved to California, and we got them from there. Albanac is from Scotland, and they came over also. They had played.
I guess if you've got 10,000 people coming, you can afford to hire a good band. Huh?
Well, it was kind of interesting. The drummer for, we had hired Brother. We had looked at all of them. We had looked at Brother and Albanac before, you know, and we hired Brother. Well, their drummer could not make it. So Albanac, who has played with them before, they've done a joint concert together before, and they've played with each other, so they kind of know each other's styles.
Mm-hmm.
So the Almanac said that they would come over and supply a drummer for Brother, and they would play their own set also.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked out that
flew them all the way in from Scotland.
We flew them in from Scotland, yes.
And what about the athletes? Are the athletes mostly local, or do they come in as well?
Most of them are local. We have a very strong athletic base here. We have a women's group. We have a novice group. We have an amateur group. And we have a master's group, which are over 40.
Mm-hmm.
We also bring in 5 to 7 professional athletes that go all over the world. 2 years ago, we had the current reigning world champion come and mm-hmm. compete at our games.
Wow!
Is it
sort of an all around thing? They have to do all the events.
Yes.
So kind of like a decathlon type thing.
The novice don't do all the events because mm-hmm. they're beginners. So they're just learning how to do the event. So they only do like three or four events.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do the heavier implements.
Mm-hmm.
So
I guess that these guys are training all the time for doing these pretty exotic sports from the point of view of most of us, like the caber toss.
Well, it originated from when the English were coming in and conquering Scotland. They had banned them from using weapons to train with. So the Scottish said, okay, we'll just use trees and rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they did, and that's how it evolved. And it also...
With these big stones and logs.
Big stones, and everybody thinks that the caber, which is the log, mm-hmm. the telephone pole,
yeah,
that they're trying to throw it as far as it. No, it's basically what it started out with is they were trying to build a bridge.
Huh.
So the object of it is to flip it so that the end that you're holding ends up at 12 o'clock away from you.
Okay.
On the other side of the stream. Uh-huh. Or the other side of the chasm.
Okay.
So they could go across.
I just think it's amazing people do that without hurting their backs and like ending up in wreck.
The professional athletes by about 40, they're done.
Yeah, not an easy event.
No.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you know, it's...
But it's obviously hugely popular. I mean, you think about 10,000 people in Anchorage coming out to see it, and all of these other events you're doing, something about it really resonates with the public. Natalie,
yes.
I mean, I don't know what particularly about, I suppose from the chauvinistic point of view, you could say, well, Celtic arts are just more interesting than other people's art. But it does seem to be something that's very popular.
I'll tell you, my point of view in this is that there are two factors. For one thing, we have to remember that the Celts occupied all of Europe, when you think of it, from the mm-hmm. Urals all the way to Scotland for hundreds of years. They influenced every one of their neighbors, whether they were the Romans, the Germans, and so on. So it is our background, all of us, of European extraction. The other thing is that we have another event in the spring, which we also do at the Senior Center because they have all these classrooms we can use. Mm-hmm. We call it the Celtic Spring Festival, and we do classes. We do demonstrations. So we teach people either crafts of their ancestors, or we have lectures, some knowledge, they can practice swords play, you know, all kinds of different things. And when you look at how it originated with the Celts and then evolved into a lot of different forms in Europe and then in America, you see that pan-European background in mm-hmm. this. And I think this is where most everybody finds a little piece of themselves. Even if they're not per se of Celtic extraction, they still relate to what is happening there. And I must say, we have seen a growth also with the Celtic Spring Festival. We had maybe 20 people registering, and I think last year we were at 120 registrations for all the different classes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great topic, and there's a lot more to talk about. Sean, I told you I'd only keep you for half an hour, but if you could stay a little bit longer after the break, I have a few more things to talk about.
Sure, you can do that.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll be talking more about Celtic celebrations, arts, Celtic New Year, Samhain, which I've finally learned to pronounce, which is the Celtic New Year celebration coming up on Saturday. The show is Hometown Alaska, and I've got three guests from the Celtic community, the Scottish Club, the Irish Club. When we come back, I'll be giving out those phone numbers in case you want to get involved and ask any questions or share any of your thoughts about Celtic New Year. And it's KSKA Anchorage. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth, and we're talking today about Irish, Scottish, Celtic community, and the Celtic New Year Samhain, which is coming up, big celebration this Saturday in Anchorage. And we welcome anyone to call, but especially those who are members of the Scottish or Irish community who have anything that you'd like to share about your ethnicity and why is it important. We were talking a little bit about why is this particular group of ethnicity so active and so kind of ingrained in popular culture in America and in Alaska? The phone number here to get on the air is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And my three guests in the studio are John Ruthie, president of the Alaska Scottish Club, Natalie Novick, who is with the Celtic community of Anchorage, and Sean McGrain of the Irish Club. Sean, thanks for sticking with us. I wanted to ask you if there is any impact or any issue that you guys have with the, you know, the troubles, the conflict that took place in Ireland for so many years, you know, with the in Northern Ireland and all that, or if you found that that's kind of irrelevant to what happens over here in the United States.
Yeah, that's it was relevant for many years. You have so many, you know, immigrants in the U.S. There's actually a larger population of Irish descents in the U.S. than there are the population of Ireland. So many people had to leave because of the famine and so many political strifes in Ireland, and people left to find a place that was better for them. Mm-hmm. So you find quite a lot of it. And in leaving, you know, they left so much behind, and for us, it was a reacquainting with a part of who you are, and I think that's the big factor, at least in the Irish communities, is that connection is where you came from, you know, and bits and pieces of the history and the culture, finding who they were. You know, can you find a relative in Ireland? You know, that's always the gem in the crown. If you can, you trace your family back 150 years and write somebody a letter,
mm-hmm.
and get a response.
Have you done that?
We have, actually. There are the name McGrain is an old Irish name in Irish Gaelic. It's Magania, and Magania was one of the three ancient kings of Ireland, and it's also one of the least populous or popular names you could see in Ireland. You know, we're not a Sullivan or a Murphy. You can't find us on sides of buildings and such, but it's one of the older ones. And my father and I, we were in Ireland in 1992, And we ended up, we were in Donegal and found a parish priest. Unfortunately, he was out, so we left a little note for him asking, you know, if he knew anything of the family name, where we might have, you know, originated in one of the counties in Ireland. And we got a nice letter from him about a month later. And he said, we were evicted from the good land.
Hmm.
And so, and that's the story through Ireland, you know, through the coming of the Normans and the English. The Irish were pushed off of their lands, and many left. And many left to go, were ejected out through penal colonies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what Australia is. You know, Australia was started out as a penal colony. My father went there in the 80s for gold mining interest. And he went through a phone book and found pages and pages of us.
Hmm.
So I think the priest was correct. We were evicted from the good land. And like I said, my family left because of the famine, like so many other families in America.
And ended up all the way up here in Alaska.
Yeah, came up in, my father came up in 1958. He was a telephone man and came up to do a contract work at Elmendorf. And decided to stay.
Interesting. So in terms of what's happening now in Ireland, they went through a horrendous economic collapse around the same time that we were having our economic downturn, but much worse even than here in the United States. Are you guys with the Irish Club in contact with them and sort of aware of what's going on over there with those kinds of issues?
There was. It definitely hit Ireland heavily, you know, for about 15 years running. Ireland was the strongest economy in the world. So many people look to China, but actually Ireland was far stronger economy than they were. And it only stopped because of the world collapse here in the last few years. And when you have a small, not just physically a small island, but a small economy, they can take a small hit, and for them became a very big hit. There was a lot of expansion with that strong economy, and that took a big bite. I had a conversation with both the previous Consul General Jerry Staunton and also the previous ambassador for Ireland, Michael Collins, about what was going on and what they were doing to recover. And they had actually had to create a new office to deal with all of these, with the collapse issue, one of the biggest being so many people had borrowed money to build small hotels all over Ireland, with the you know, pointed towards the tourist end.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the collapse came, they had properties that people couldn't afford, couldn't pay on anymore. They were either finished properties, properties in construction, or properties that were just breaking ground. So they had to figure out what to do with these properties. So many of them, they left as a hotel, if you will, that was needed in that area. Where others, they took and demolished the entire building and left a pad that something else could be built on, you know, that had all the utilities going to. So they had to take some very strict measures, if you will, to try and to compensate for that, but in the reverse. Right.
Extreme over-construction and too much built. Yeah, I've read about that. So
yeah, it was very severe.
So you mentioned the you know, the Sullivans, and of course we've got a Sullivan who's mayor, who owns an Irish pub, and now that I'm thinking about it, it seems like Irish stuff is ingrained in every part of, you know, St. Patrick's Day. Everyone's Irish. I'm just curious about the some of the Irish stereotypes, and you know, it's that, you know, about, you know, Irish people have a bad temper, or Irish people drink too much, and that sort of thing. Do you think that stuff's gone away, or do you find it offensive, or is just something you laugh off at this point?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, granted, it is a stereotype. And I think a lot of these stereotypes popped up with the huge influx of the people after the famine into the U.S. in particular. You know, there were signs, you know, you think of the 60s, the whole civil rights issues and signs all over the place, you know, whites only and blacks only or coloreds only.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you go back to the time of the famine, and it was no Irish allowed.
Right.
So you couldn't get jobs. You had to create things yourself. So a lot of these stereotypes arose from that whole time period.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a, you know, as with any other country, it's not a factual basis. You're always going to have some percentage, which is, you know, you look around Anchorage, geez, you know, Anchorage has the largest percentage of alcoholism per capita in the U.S. I think it still stands. It's been that way for 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, but you can't go around and say, oh, you know, all Alaskans are alcoholics.
Right.
It's not. You have a percentage. And, it, you know, the stereotype, like I say, arose at a period of time that doesn't exist anymore.
Well, it's turned from being something that was, as you say, an issue of prejudice against the Irish, and now everyone wants to say they're Irish, whether they are or not. So I guess you've made some progress on that count. Well, thanks very much for being with us, Sean McGrain. I want to let you know, let you go, because I know you're sitting there on the phone, but Sean McGrain with the Irish Club of Anchorage, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. So long. So, Natalie, we didn't give you a chance to talk about your heritage. You don't have an Irish brogue, so you'll have to fill us in and tell us also about what the Celtic Community of Alaska is, what that organization is all about.
Well, I was president of the organization for a number of years, until this year, actually. Mm. I think for the simple reason that being neither Irish nor Scottish, they figured I wouldn't take sides.
Right.
And my side is the Brythonic part, that is Welsh and Breton, and I've learned both languages.
Is that right?
That was quite hard, and I'm at Irish now. I've been at it for 40 years, and boy, that's one of the hardest languages I've learned. But
I want to hear my answer to my question, but now I have to hear some Welsh. Can you say, like, Happy Celtic New Year in Welsh or something like that?
In Welsh, I would have to think about it.
Okay.
I can sing in Welsh. Actually, I'm told that it sounds like Breton when I speak Welsh, which doesn't surprise me a minute.
So you speak both Breton and Welsh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know that Breton was a language.
Yeah. And it's very distinct from French, and the French have done the same to the Welsh that the English have done to the Scots and the Irish. So
okay.
We do understand each other very well. There is actually an 18th century battle where you had the English against the French with the generals, you know, on their separate hills looking at each other,
mm-hmm.
and actually sending their troops against each other. But the troops on one side were Welsh, and on the other side they were Bretons. And they were singing the same war song. And when they came within ear reach of each other, they recognized each other and they threw themselves in the arms of each other to the great dismay of the generals on the hills.
Oh, what a great
story. Yeah.
So help us with the geography. Wales is the southwesternmost point right before you get to Cornwall, which is a very southern point of
Great Britain. Yes.
And then Brittany
is the western peninsula in France that stretches under Cornwall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Brittany because originally it was Little Britain, and the original population was Gaulish, like, you know, the rest of France. And then when the Saxons started moving into Britain, a lot of people migrated to that place where they knew they could still communicate in a Celtic language and they were probably related to each other. So they kind of repopulated Brittany with people who spoke the same language, and it really reinforced the language. And
but it's been part of France for a very long time.
It's been part of France since 1532 in violation of a treaty. I mean, I'm not going to go into the details.
And the people from Brittany being like the Scottish or the Irish and the Welsh wanting to have their independence?
Well, independence is a big word. What they want is self-determination.
Mm-hmm.
And they have pretty much achieved it because
mm-hmm.
France has been divided for now about 30 years into regions. And Brittany is, most of it is a region by itself. The southern part, which has the ancient capital, has been annexed to another region, but people in Brittany still consider it as being part of it. Mm. And the thing is that there has been enough antagonism and problems with the French that it has contributed to keep this identity alive. Mm-hmm. To me, it's very interesting because it's not the case with neighboring Normandy, where you had the Norse settling in there, mm-hmm. you know, the Vikings, mm-hmm. and they assimilated completely with the French, and there was never a question that Normandy was not part of France. Brittany, not the same thing at all.
Celtic people are too ornery.
Yeah, there is something to that. And the western part of Brittany, the western half, still speaks the language. There is about 200,000 speakers. Mm. And they really see themselves as different. And my grandmother, who was from the eastern part, which is closer to France, would never say she was French. She used to say, I am a Breton, and proud of it, and, you know, transmitting all this sense of identity that I wouldn't get from my parents, from her daughter, who had completely given up on that.
Mm. So tell me about your story, about how you got to Alaska and how you sort of decided this is something that you wanted to make a big part of your life.
Well, I came here because of the other side of my family, which is from Russia. And at some point, I was wondering where I could work, you know, for indigenous peoples, which I had done for quite some time, both in Russian and English. And, of course, Alaska is quite obvious. And mm-hmm. I showed up here just when the border was opening and moved to Kotzebue to help open the border. Mm-hmm. And I got to Kotzebue in January with a little pinch in my heart thinking, you know, I'm saying goodbye to the little harbors in Brittany and the little boats in the harbor and the fishing nets drying on the beach and all that. Mm-hmm. Huh. Come July, I had my little boats in the harbor right. and the fishing nets on the beach, and the hills around Kotzebue looked so much like Western Scotland that it was incredible. You know, no high vegetation, no trees. And then the hills are all these colors of, you know, purple and green and golden that reminded me so much of the Hebrides in Scotland, really striking.
Neat. So I'm curious as to why the Celtic part of your ancestry is so important to you. Is there a Russian club in Anchorage? Is there?
Yeah, there is also.
Is there? Club. Are you involved
yes,
in that too?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So you're just involved in everything.
more or less. But the interesting thing to me, and historically maybe there is an explanation, is that I find no people in Europe closer to each other than the Celts and the Slavs. Mm-hmm. They're very similar. And maybe it can be explained by the fact that maybe originally everybody was like that, but then you had all these movements in continental Europe where all kinds of other peoples moved in. And those two groups were kind of isolated at each end of Europe, and to this day they are really very much the same. To me, it's striking that in the Celtic languages, like in the Slavic languages, there is no verb to have. Mm-hmm. There is with you, and it's a sense of, you know, a temporal thing. It could disappear tomorrow. You don't have a sense of possessing something like you would have in English or French.
So a little bit of a cultural character that's the same.
Yeah, very much the same. The drinking, of course, is the same. The music, also very important in people's lives. The sense of hospitality, of keeping your traditions alive. It's very much the same.
Interesting. I never would have thought of that. So you have a lot of languages. Russian, English?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started collecting them when I was young.
Do you find it difficult to keep speaking languages when there are very few people or no one around to speak them to?
Yeah, I have to say Breton is really a challenge. I had the opportunity to speak Breton in Alaska here for the first time this year. I've been here almost 25 years, and there was one Breton who visited and spoke a little Breton, so we had a little conversation. But it's true, it's not easy.
You have to reach way back in your brain to bring it out?
To bring it out, or I try to keep it alive with music and reading and, you know, trying to go there once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's Hometown Alaska. We're talking about the Celtic communities in Alaska and the big celebration that's coming up this weekend for Celtic New Year, Samhain, on Saturday at the Senior Center. That was Natalie Novick, who's a board member of the Celtic community of Alaska. And John Ruth is with us as well. He's with the Alaska Scottish Club, and we'd love to hear from you if you'd like to contribute to the conversation in the last few minutes we have here. The number in Anchorage is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752, and email hometown@alaskapublic.org. John, you know, I don't know much about it. Actually, I'm making my ignorance fairly obvious in this interview, but I'm learning a lot. But I know that there's some desire among the Scottish to be more independent, to have more self-determination. Is that something that you guys in your club sort of are aware of, or are you sort of more just into the cultural stuff?
Well, we try to concentrate more on the cultural stuff. That's part of our mission statement as a Scottish club, is to bring the culture and heritage of Scotland to the people of Alaska. And I'm sure that some of us are aware of the things that are, we watch the news and, you know, see it come up in the news, and it, you know, Scotland, oh, hey, what's going on with that? You know? So,
But I guess everybody's seen the movie Braveheart and knows, you know, the Scottish and the English have been at each other's throats forever, right?
Yes, it's been they've been a big conflict between them for a long time. Yes, and there are parts of that were actually historically correct, but not all of it. You know, they did introduce some fiction into it. But there were some things that were actually historically correct in the, you know, there were quite a few things in the movie that were accurate.
Yeah. Is there any kind of reenactment stuff that happens with the, I mean, is that part of?
It's, there's Natalie had mentioned the recruitance group. They actually do. They have a festival. It's called Three Barons, and I'm sure a lot of people have been to that. And they do a reenactment of a, what is it, 16th century?
Yeah.
16th, or sometimes they go even 15th or 14th century English village, and they recreate it and act. They have their members make their own clothing out of that type of, you know, a more ancient type of materials, and they make their own tools, and they make their own, and they give demonstrations of the fighting styles, and they actually live as you would as a peasant back in the 16th century.
Yeah, it sounds really fun.
Yeah, it's and we all participate a little bit. We have several of our members have a presence there, and I've been to it several times myself, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
but
it seems like a lot of this is stuff that when you have a hobby or a group that you're connected to, you've got a community of people you hang out with, you have, you know, celebrations that you attend, and it sort of gives you a social life and a connection in a community of Anchorage, which is pretty large city, really. And you don't necessarily, you know, maybe you have the people you work with, but this gives you somebody you have an additional connection to.
Yes, and it, like I said, most of it's a lot of fun. We get to go out and listen to good music and drink whiskey and
throw logs and rocks around.
Logs and rocks around to get your aggressions out.
Well, you guys definitely have the best whiskey. There's no question about that.
Yes, most of that came about because a lot of the water was not potable, so they had to do something to make it. They had to purify it, and it just added flavor to the whiskey.
Do at your gatherings, do people bring out the single malt and the good scotch, or is that sort of like...
It's not encouraged, but there is some.
Has happened,
yes,
surely.
Yes.
Okay.
Tasting now.
Well, yes. We at the Scottish Games, we do have this will be our third year. We have a Scotch tasting at the Scottish Highland Games. This will be our third year doing it. Odom is one of our big sponsors, and they bring out several I think last year they had 16 different whiskeys.
Mm-hmm. Based on the prices of these things, I expect there's quite a fee to get into the tasting, huh?
Yeah, what the fee for the actual tasting is separate from the games.
I
believe that it was $30 last year, and what you got for that was you got five or six tastes of whiskey, different styles and different regions. There's several different regions of whiskey mm-hmm. manufactured in Scotland. And you also got a whiskey tasting glass, which is like a brandy snifter, but smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a shot and a half size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen those. Mm-hmm.
And it's engraved with our name and the Scottish tasting and the year. And some of those have actually started to become collector's items now.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that glass and you get a taste of different types of Scotch whiskey.
Uh-huh.
And they're generally, they range... Most of them were $85 to $150 a bottle in that range, and, mm-hmm. and up from there a few. Several of them were a little bit more. But
yeah. That's probably a good opportunity to get a taste. If you go to a bar and order a shot of it, it'll probably be $20. Yeah,
$15-$20, something mm-hmm. like that, yeah. And this gave you, it's a palate education.
Mm-hmm.
It's educating the palates of the whiskey drinkers about the different types of whiskeys from Scotland.
If they develop a few enthusiasts, they'll sell a lot more of that expensive whiskey.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Natalie, tell us one more time about when the event is happening. We've got about another minute left and what people can expect there.
So it's going to be Saturday the 26th. Starting at 6:30 at the Senior Center, which, if you don't know where it is on 1300 East 19th Avenue, down from the bar. And the tickets in advance are $20. At the door, they will be $25. And you will have everything you can dream of that night. Crooked Road playing Irish music, Rogues and Wenches singing, Midnight Sun Cloggers dancing. There will be food. There will be a bar. There will be all kinds of entertainment, a silent auction, a costume contest, and, of course, the fires outside.
And you said something about putting slips of paper in the fire?
Yeah, what we do is let people write, we provide slips of paper. They write what they are sorry for the past year that they can throw in the old fire. And then make their wishes for the next year into the new fire.
That's a perfect place to end. Well, thanks so much for being with me. That was Natalie Novick with the Celtic Community of Alaska, and John Ruthie is with the Alaska Scottish Club. We earlier heard from Sean McGrain with the Irish Club. Get out and enjoy this. We've got links to the different clubs on our website, alaskapublic.org. Sounds like a lot of fun. Next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Kathleen McCoy for a discussion on the airport master plan. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is the chief content officer for Alaska Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.